We're back at the races, 15 into hour two. Rolly Gift, FYC. Johnny come home, and Johnny did come home after he and Gail took in their Cape May July 4th experience, as they always do. Johnny, welcome to summer.
Stevie, summer's here, and the time is right.
Exactly. Dancing in the streets for the start of Saratoga Thursday.
I know, everyone said this, but it's true. I can't believe it's here, and probably partially because it's starting a week earlier that I can't believe it's here. But, you know, and when Saratoga begins, of course, I look forward to visiting there. And it's going to be great this year because I'm going to visit. I'm going to do the coveted racing double. The coveted summer racing doubleheader. I'm going to catch Del Mar and Saratoga in the same summer. And that is always, when a horse player can do that, everything is right with the world. But I don't want to think about my Saratoga trip. I push it in the back of my mind. It pops to the front, and I want to push it back. Because, of course, you know, I come up with Will and Travers Weekend, and we so look forward to that because it's Travers Week, and it's so wonderful. We look forward to it, but it's at the end of the summer, and I don't want to rush the summer. I want it to take its time. So every time I think about the Saratoga trip, I say, no, forget it. That's way in August. Don't rush it. Let's concentrate on what's going on now. So I don't want to rush the summer.
Now, that's a fair point. And, you know, as those of us, you know, that live here, we all know you hit Travers Week, and it is. It's the signal, you know, for Tina, you know, to go back to school, you know, within a fortnight and all that. It you're absolutely right. You know that, you know, that the end is near, and that, As we have said, when the last race runs at Saratoga, when they come around the turn for home, you can feel the cool, the fall air that comes back. I don't know if it was Durkin that created that, you know, that scenario, but or if it was something I read, it might have been, you know, that who knows? It could be a Red Smith ism, but. In the meantime, we do have what looks to be a great kickoff. Certainly the weekend looks fabulous. And Thursday, there's some Saratoga summer weather potentially Thursday and Friday. But, you know, some chances of thunderstorms. But, you know, the train will pull out of the station, Johnny. And before we talk about some of the racing and what's gone on the last 10, 12 days, since we spoke last, let's give everybody get it out of the way and make sure they're aware of how Fun in the Sun is going to work, because it, from a scheduling standpoint, obviously it's coming, its kickoff is coming a week early too.
Absolutely. Actually, this Saturday, Fun in the Sun will kick off. Excuse me, I'm sorry. And the great thing about this year, we've got 8 weeks of Fun in the Sun, and it's going to kick off July 13th, which is this Saturday. And Fun in the Sun is a weekly online handicapping competition for Express Bet account holders. And it's each Saturday in July and August. And what you get to do is you make a live $10 win wager on one horse in each of 10 mandatory races. And we're going to have weekly prizes to the top earners, $5,000 the first, $2,000 the second, $1,000 the third, $500 the fourth. So all you have to do is finish fourth or better to earn some of that money. Plus, since the wagers are live, if you pick a couple winners along the way, the contest basically, you know, pays for itself. There's no registration fee. There's no, no takeout, no rake. Express Bet, you know, pays the freight for the whole contest. So all the prize money is awarded by ExpressBet. And then the other interesting aspect of Fun in the Sun is that it rewards consistent play, dedicated play. In other words, if you play all summer, each Saturday in the summer, your total is cumulative. Your total earnings are cumulative. So at the end of the entire Fun of the Sun term, which is 8 Saturdays, and Saturdays in July and August, excuse me, the top 4 players will earn entry into the Pegasus World Cup Betting Championship, and that's a $12,000 value each. The person who finishes 5th will get $4,000 prize. So those are 5 places in the cumulative totals throughout the entire season. Look, we all know we can't have a great Saturday all the time. We're going to have off weeks, and that's the case with the Fun in the Sun. You could have an off 3 or 4 weeks, have a good 5th week, and you're right back in the game. Cumulative total speaking, and also prize winning. If you get one of those prizes, it's going to make for a nice little score. So we're going to use Saratoga races, obviously, the first Saturday because Del Mar's not in action yet. But then when Del Mar gets rolling, we attempt to balance it out with a similar number of Del Mar and Saratoga races. But we also look at the weather and try and, if things don't look good, and probably in Saratoga because Del Mar doesn't rain very much. But, you try and put together a nice series of events so the horse players can have a great time playing the races and make it challenging as well. So Fun and Sun, go to ExpressBet.com. $120,000 in total prizes, and it's free. I have to be an ExpressBet account holder, and the wagers, as I said, are live. So you keep what you win. 68 total prizes for the weekly prizes, $68,000 each week, $8,500 in prizes, and $52,000 in seasonal prizes. Jesus. It's a $120,000 tournament. You know what? You know you're going to play Del Mar. You know you're going to play Saratoga. Take a look at the mandatory races and make a live $10 wager on one horse in each of those races. It's probably something you're doing anyway. So join in the fun, and it goes all summer long. So good luck.
Absolutely. And we'll remind and we'll cajole and get everybody excited as the action unfolds. Let's talk about Johnny the last couple of weeks, and you can fold in your Cape May week as well. But this was an important couple of weekends, and certainly we're going to talk to Jimmy Jerkins later. The breakthrough by Preservationist that was. That was certainly noteworthy. And you had, the two turf, these turf triples that Martin Panza has crafted in New York. And things got off to, upset starts, really. Henley's Joy and Concrete Rose. I mean, just the fact that Chad Brown, frankly, didn't win one or the other or both is noteworthy.
Yeah, all those points that you bring up are excellent. I'll start with Preservationist because that's the first one you mentioned. And, there's a couple things about his form that are interesting to me. A couple of, I want to say old school. I want to describe them as being old school. And the fact that it's Jimmy Jerkins training Preservationist with this old school, it's reminiscent of something that, I don't know, Alan Jerkins might do in the respect that it's old school training. For example, this is a six-year-old that's only made seven starts. So obviously there are issues present, but they've been, you know, they've been handled with kid gloves. Seven starts, or now eight starts now, five wins, which is just, you know, shows you some, you know, some excellent handling, excellent horsemanship. Also, the fact that this horse, this six-year-old, has gone through the condition spread out over, you know, over since when he broke his maiden back in 2018, you know, spread out. He's gone maiden race, non-winners, other than, he's won a two other than, he's won a three other than, and now he's, you know, optional claiming tags assigned to those races, but he's pretty much done it old school, gone up the ladder, winning the races, and the game was originally kind of designed. We don't see this much, and at least I don't notice it much anymore. Certainly going through two other lands, but to get through a three other land, mostly because they don't fill it at a lot of racetracks, but to have a three other land, and then your first stakes engagement is a grade two, and you win that at six. So this is really kind of an old school progression development, handling with kid gloves, but also the workout pattern for preservation is so interesting. He last ran on the 23rd of May on a sloppy track and won his three other than. But then since then, he comes back June 5th. He's got a slow half. June 7th, and they're all 7 days apart. He comes back with a 5/8 on the training track at Belmont. Then he goes a mile over a good track in 142, and then 7/8 in 128-2, and then a blowout of 48, third best of 30. So if you look at the entirety of this horse, you see so many more nuances. That's an unusual work pattern for nowadays, and it's. It reminds me of old school. Right? The whole treatment of this horse is so interesting. So again, I mean, how much more can he do at his age? Are the infirmities gone? Or are they merely just, you know, is he able to get in a couple races out of them and then things flare up again? I don't know. But looking at this, it's so unusual to see this past performance line. So I thought that was impressive.
Agreed, and I'm looking forward to talking to Jimmy. And of course, for Centennial, it's a real shot at a big prize. And so excited for Don Little Jr. And the Centennial partners. Talk about. I don't want to leave out. By the way, we'll talk to Shug probably tomorrow. Don't want to leave out Code of Honor's performance, Johnny, but let's talk about the other three-year-olds as well. And, of course, Promises Fulfilled, you know, finally got a chance to dictate terms and took full advantage in the John Nayrud. But talk about the three-year-olds first.
Well, Code of Honor, it was an outstanding performance. I mean, he really leveled out in the lane and he drew off so convincingly. It really was the type of performance similar to what we saw in the Fountain of Youth, but he even looked more mature. He looked like he's filled out since then, and he's matured, and he seemed much more focused. There was no goosing off. It seemed like it was a really focused performance. So he was impressive. I also think of note, and I could be wrong, these are all judgment calls, but I think that one-turn mile really suits him well. That may be his optimum performance at that distance, at that layout. going a mile and a quarter, which I know the Travers has got to be the ultimate goal with him, he can win in a mile and a quarter, no doubt about that. He's a very good horse. But I don't know if that mile and a quarter is his best distance. It'll be interesting to see how he progresses leading up to that, how Shug trains him, and how he, you know, responds, whether he runs again, which I think Shug mentioned in another race. I don't know.
Jim Dandy.
I assume that's probably still on the table. So the development into the Travers, he certainly seems like a better horse right now. His competition Saturday, I think you have to take that with a grain of salt. Final Jeopardy ran the race. It seemed like he would run to run second. We're waiting. Some question about it. By the way, both of those runners are non-stakes winners, even though we're waiting for second in the Grade 1 Del Mar Futurity. And so the field was not the best, but it was a perfect comeback spot. If you're a trainer or an owner and you find that spot, it's a perfect place to come back, to show your development, to get back on track. Jim Dandy, Travers, man, it couldn't have been a better place to start your stuff. So it was impressive, a very nice race. And then the Promises Fulfilled in the neighborhood. here's a horse that we've always known has been a quality runner. He's got speed. We've always seen him, his speed in action. He was one of those 3-year-olds that had tremendous talent. And so his connections figured, we've got to go down the path toward the Kentucky Derby, which they did. They took it all the way to the Kentucky Derby, and he showed the speed in all the prep races. Won the Jerkins last year, going 7/8, which is always an outstanding sprint race. It showcases the best sprinters. Won the Phoenix. Got hooked pretty good in the Breeders' Cup Sprint, and they perhaps got fried. But this race, the cards really look like they were all in his corner. He drew the outside box, which is excellent for him. He's going to show his speed, no doubt about it. And he looked like the speed of the speed. And then his fortune went from good to great when his competition, the other speed horses in the race, didn't get away well. So he found himself virtually breezing along in the lead, and that was good night, Irene. And when you give a horse of that quality, who looked to be the speed of the speed anyway, when you give him a head start, forget about it. It's over. So, he did what he needed to do in a very nice fashion. And the cutback, I think, from the mile and the Metropolitan Handicap suited him well. And Dale Roman's commenting after the race, Breeders' Cup Sprint, Breeders' Cup Mile, he kind of toying with the idea of the mile. I don't know. This guy's a really good sprinter. But I understand why he's thinking that, because the pace in the mile is a little more forgiving. But at Santa Anita, it is a two-turn mile. One-turn mile, maybe more inch. I don't know. It's just, let's keep an eye on how that develops. But very nice performance from him. the Belmont Derby, that was the big upset with Henley's Joy winning 20-1. Turned everybody. Naira late 6-5, which I'm going to deviate here a second. I'm so happy that was three at last. Thank Secretary Almighty that Naira late 6-5 is three at last. That all of us around the country can play the Naira late 6-5, the Naira best late bird, whatever it's called, the late pick five at Naira track. It was previously restricted to Naira Best account holders and then some other people playing in the New York freezing, certainly live on track and so forth. But now it's open to all the ABW players and all the people across the country, and that's a wonderful feeling because they're great races. And as horse players, you know, we'd all like to participate. But anyway, Henley's Joy upset that apple cart, upset the pick fours. And I think the story, his story is, he finally, you know, it wasn't like he got lucky. He finally didn't get unlucky. You know, he finally had a trip that, you know, suited him, and he was able to, you know, run to his best. And I think, when that happens, when you've been having trouble, especially in turf races, when you've been having issues and you finally get to, you know, a clear shot, and maybe some of your foes don't have perfect trips. I particularly noticed Seismic Wave was getting, you know, the run of the rails and had ahead of steam turning into the stretch, and then Joel Rosario, they had nowhere to go. He had to put on the brakes, and wait. And then when he got clear, he didn't even fire anyway. So maybe the momentum killed him completely. But he had ahead of steam. He looked like, if you'd asked me, you know, on the turn, on the final turn, who's the winner, I would have plucked him out of the crowd. But it didn't work out for him. So, you know, Henley's Joy was reasonably just off the early pace. He was in a great spot. He got through. He got clear in the lane. And, you know, kicked away early and held on. He finally got a clear trip, and that's the turf racing. That's a lot of the time, half the battle. The other thing to note about this race overall, though, you know, if you're ever going to really spread, and I think if you were, yep, if you were going to really spread, Henley's Joy would not have been outlandish at all. You know, he wasn't. You know, look at his turf record. He's 6-for-9, first or second. That's pretty good. So, I mean, if you're going, and also you had to notice that 59-3 worked. Now I know it's in the Churchill Downs Training Center. It was only 1 of 11, but that's a nice bullet work going into the race. And if you kind of had an idea that, man, this horse just hasn't been getting lucky. He's been close. He's always close. He runs his race. If he gets lucky, he could win. And, of course, I'm glad to see Jeff Bloom of Bloom Racing Stable. I'm glad to see him win again. I've known Jeff a long time, since his riding career ages ago. So, anyway, I think, yeah, she could have gone deep enough, and I should have. Slipping at the switch, this is one of the cases where I just didn't go deep enough in the race. I definitely spread in the race, but this would have been like, how did I miss this guy? You know, it's kind of kicking myself a bit. And then the Philly division, I don't think I've ever been more wrong about a horse than I've been about Newspaper of Record. I don't know, is this a case of a filly just not developing from 2 to 3 and the rest of the class flying by her, you know? I know she's ranked this year, and they try to get her settled, and they wrestle with her, and that experiment, certain. But last year she wasn't ranked. They just let her run last year, and Rank didn't matter last year because she went fast and she kept going and no one could catch her. She opened up, in fact. This year, she's gone to the lead in a couple of her races and she's been caught. So this time they thought, well, we'll take her back. And it was a disaster. He could never get her to relax. I let her tease tried and she just wouldn't relax. And that was that. The winner, we cannot take anything away from Concrete Rose. What an outstanding record she has now. She's 5-for-6 And with the only misstep on a record in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies over that yielding, tough Churchill course, when she broke from the rail in a 14 filly field, and remember, the outside was best that day. And that was a clear distinction, excuse me, that the riders were all in agreement that the outside lanes were much better. So draw a line through that race. You're looking at a filly who going into Saturday was 4 for 4, and really, how could you go against her? I don't think you could. I don't think there was any reason. I don't think there were any negatives. She has enough speed to be reasonably placed against any kind of pace. She finishes. She's a winner. She was a single, I think, in many cases. But again, you know, and facing what made it difficult to really take a stand with her, as outstanding as her record was from a horse player's standpoint, what made it so difficult was, you know, newspaper record looked so outstanding last year, but that was impressed in my mind. And you kept thinking, maybe, but you certainly have lost confidence in her this year. But maybe, you know, that's going to jump up. That old form's going to jump up. And then, in addition, she was one of, I think it was 3 Chad Browns and 2 Aidan O'Briens in the race. So here you've got the top, 2 of the top trainers in the world with the best, not just horse flesh, but specifically 3-year-old filly horse flesh. They get their hands on the best of that group, and they do great with that particular group. And you're going to single against them. So yeah, I see where people might have gone, I got to use a couple in here. And when you start to do that, your ticket grows, and you can't use a horse like Kenley's Joy. So that's my weekend roundup.
No, I appreciate it. A couple of things. The decision with newspaper record is perplexing because this was where, if anywhere, you know, going this distance, this is where you wanted to let her run. Just give her head and let her control the pace. And, you know, we reference back to Catch a Glimpse, the Cassie, who everybody said, oh, well, she'll never win beyond a mile. Oh, she can't win beyond a mile and a 16th or a mile and an eighth. No, when you've got a speed horse on the turf, the longer they go, the easier it is for them because the pace gets slower and slower the further you're going. And, you know, unless there's clear pace combatants that are going to vie for the front end. So this was a crazy place to think that, okay, well, we'll get her to relax when she's shown no interest in relaxing. So I'm sure Chad'll, you know, he'll rework and you know, bob and weave and figure out what to do because it is mysterious. I got to say one thing, Johnny. You know, you probably listened to John's service earlier, and I went into Saturday when I wrote the races up, and the Delaware Oaks was part of the Naira cross country pick 5, which continues to be a you know, like any of these multi race, multi track opportunities, it always seems to pay well. In fact, people are mystified by the disparity between the payoffs. It's kind of interesting. I'm sure we'll get to that this week, but there's a few things also. People seem mystified by preservationist and his price when the gates opened, although anybody that was watching the Will Pays on the multi-race wagers knew that he was going to come down and be second choice, because he was second choice in all the multi-race wagers. I mean, the fact that he was 7-1 and 6-1, you know, 2 minutes to 3 minutes to post is immaterial. I mean, he fell into line, just like they fall into line a lot of times, you know, during the week. But anyway, the performance of Concrete Rose, I can't wait to talk to Rusty Arnold tomorrow. This isn't fair to her. I mean, once again, everybody comes out of the race talking about newspaper of record because of the anticipation, I guess, and everything that we thought going into her three-year-old year. So it's really not fair to, you know, this twirling candy filly who has just been spectacular. And, you know, Rusty Arnold kind of was expecting what he got in the Edgewood, but she's now, you know, 3 for 3 on the year, and you know, we'll see what happens on the filly side, but she's making a case for herself as the year progresses. So,
yeah, you know, you brought up some great points, and I think I gave Concrete Rose her props.
No doubt. I'm just talking in general.
You're right, because I began my discussion of the race with newspaper record. You're absolutely right. But I gave Concrete Rose her props. She's earned them. She's phenomenal. The other point that you mentioned about Preservationist and the price and the money, you know, the people who looked up when she's 6-1 with three horses to go in the gate or whatever, he's 6-1 with three horses to go in the gate. That was a bad price. That's not, you know, that's like, you know, walking into an automobile lot and seeing a sticker on a brand new car that says $98. The price is wrong, folks. You know, that 6-1 that's not real. And the reason I say that what happens is these people, these, you know, folks who have these models, these computer models, they recognize that price is not right. And they knock it down to what it should be. And if you've got two or three of these, or however many there are, of these computer models going, and you have regular people looking up saying 6-1 is not, and the money is going to come in, that price is going to drop to where it should be,
right?
About where it should be. It's going to happen more times than not, not all the time. But more times than not, those prices are going to come down. These are markets, and especially at the big tracks, these are markets that people look at as seriously as they look at the stock market. There's money involved, and there are people just like at Wall Street looking for an edge where nickels and dimes matter, let alone dollars in mutual payoffs. So the markets are tight. Now, if you look at Preservationist, if you look at his past performances, you know the biggest price? He's been favored 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. He's been favored 6 out of his previous 7 starts before Saturday. And his biggest price was 5-2 in his career. So, you know, that he would be 6-1, you know, yes, this is a tougher field. It's his first stakes race. But 7-2 is more logical than 6-1. So anyway, look, people want to complain about it. It's the market is correcting itself. But as you said, if you look at the multi-race wagers, you see where, you know, the appropriate money is gone. That tells you a lot. So don't expect it surprises me. It surprises me that people are so surprised. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. No, it does. I know exactly. I mean, I, you know, people that are saying, oh, something has to be done about it. Done about what? What genie is going to be put back in the bottle here? You know, and I, at some point, you know, maybe Johnny, you know, we could have a round table discussion about limiting access, the groups and the, you know, the computer assisted wagering, you know, limiting their access, their direct access to the pools, and you know, that might somehow you know, slow the or spread out somehow the way the money comes in, so that it isn't always in the last flash or the last two flashes or at the flush. You know, the flush comes when the gates open and the stop betting notice goes out onto the system, and then there's one last flush that pulls all the money in, and the money's been bet. But, and I've explained this so many times, and also the graphics, you know, there's a lot of different things here that would go into perception for the public, whether it's fractional odds display, whether it's, and we've done a few of them, 20-second intervals instead of 30 and 45-second intervals, more flushes, and more, you know, more, reaching into the system and pulling the money in the last 2 minutes. And I've explained this before, 70% of the pool will come in the last 3 minutes and 30% comes in the last minute. I don't know what else we can do to try to assuage people's frustration over this.
One more thing to add to your, and everything you said is absolutely correct. One more thing to add is that people racing horse players of a certain age, mine included, remember the days, the pre-simulcast days, the when all the money was on track, right? And you say to yourself, "This never happened. This never used to happen." Yes, because the money was all on track. Nobody can put that much money through the window just before they break. It never happened because, yes, it never happened. Why? Everyone thinks there's something nefarious that's going on right now because of computers that's making this happen. No, it's just the volume of money that can now move in milliseconds that was never possible before. And the stock market is the same way. Money moved. Now they are they're way ahead of us as far as, you know, how fast their money moves. But, you know, it's the same thing. It's not the same thing. It's similar. And there's no real, I guess the closing bell would be the one that, you know, the day's closing bell. But there's no frantic, like, last-second limited number of stocks that you're looking at in the last second to see what happens. You know what I mean? If you tried to draw a comparison, it would be hard to do because it's, you know, it's so different. But it's similar in that the money moves much faster these days. And it just, you know, you've got to have a system that you keep up with it. So, yes, are you disappointed when you bet a horse in 6-1 and he returns 7-2? You're damn right I'm disappointed. I'm damn right pissed. I'm not disappointed. I'm pissed. But then you got to go back and look and say, well, was 6-1 a pipe dream? You know, I like to write down early in the wagering the prices on each horse. And early in the wagering, when it kicks over, the official, and then the next race starts up in the first couple minutes, that's the odds I like to look at. And Capital Board was 3-5. Preservationist was 9-1 in that first flash. And, you know, I looked at that and I thought, where do I sign up? You know?
Yeah. So, yeah, absolutely.
It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen, you know?
Well, if people want to teach themselves, I mean, anybody that watches certainly the Naira feed, Andy has talks about this and has talked about it for years. And when he opens up a prattle before a race and reviews the board, he invariably will mention so-and-so right now is, you know, 8-1, but is going to end up being, you know, second choice, or, you know, he extrapolates from the, you know, from the pool, from the will pay pools. And, you know, one thing I there's a few different people that I read and I listen to, on Jerry Hollendorfer's board, math capper, a guy by the name of Rocky, who's a statistician and a mathematician.
Whoa, 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 whoa. You said Jerry Hollendorfer's board.
Jerry Brown. Jerry Brown's. we'll get to Jerry this week, too. We'll address that. Jerry Brown's board, Thurgraph. Math capper, Rocky. And Rocky, he explains these metrics really well. And there's even a few times where the will pays are not even reflective all that accurately. And so even that sometimes won't help you. He pointed out coming out of this, when you get a long shot that wins the first leg of a double, that can skew the numbers when it comes to the will pays. So it's not always completely accurate about where a horse's price is going to go. I mean, there's certain conditions, but one thing you certainly can do, and you mentioned, Johnny, looking at you know, the way, for instance, ExpressBet, the graphics, you can print, and I did this all during Ask It, so it's fresh in my mind. I would hit the print logo and print out the page with the prices, and then I had it in my hand to look at the bookie shops and compare. Well, you can do that if you're, you know, with whatever your interface is, you can do that. Take a, you know, right after a race goes official, go get the will pays, pull up the will pay drop down from the menu, and take a print it out, or take a screen capture of it yourself so that you have it and you can use it as a reference guide instead of just jumping to these conclusions and adding to, you know, internet hysteria. You'll also teach yourself a way to approach and a way to get a clue about horses you may have missed in your own handicapping. Because invariably, Johnny, when I look at will pays, particularly the last leg of races, and we get to pick fives and pick fours and pick sixes, and I see that a horse is, you know, second or third choice in the multis that I didn't include, that I don't have covered, I always start to sweat. Invariably.
It's like, oh, my God.
Exactly. It's like, they, you know, you're going to get one of those they knew moments, because or I didn't know moments, not that they knew. Anyway, listen, this is, we could go on and on. I got to get to Richard Baltus and Jimmy Jerkins yet. And before we go, though, I'm sure you heard John Service, and couldn't have been more happy for Will and the win on Tuesday in the Dr. Penny, as an owner, Will Schwartz and his partner, their first win, first graded stake win. Not a Prada price. It just had to be a huge thrill. How much did you make off the tote?
Well, look, I told you a couple of weeks ago, my bad streak ended, so I'm okay. I will give congratulations to, certainly I congratulated Will. I also congratulate Dr. Lou Bucky, who runs the main and all the mainline stable partners. Nice win for them. First graded stakes win for them, so that's fabulous. And Will is beside himself, you know. And that, after all, that's why we play this game, right?
Yeah, yeah. When it came across the wire, I did not bet. I'd forgotten about the race. Actually, I'd forgotten on Tuesday.
Look at you with horses in all over the country, all over the Eastern Seaboard in the next few days. You know, you're becoming,
Let's not get carried away. you're getting carried away. Johnny, summer's here, and we're excited. I appreciate it. We'll talk next week, and we'll be underway.
Thank you, Steve. I can't wait. We'll have the first week's results from Fun in the Sun. Will be in the book. That'll be fun to talk about.
Absolutely. Johnny D, everybody, and top of the hour upon us. Let's take a break. Richard Baltus won himself a Queen's Plate. And those of you that listen on a regular basis, you knew a little bit about One Bad Boy. And hopefully that helped you parlay into something good coming out of the Queens play. Richard Balthus joins us and, of course, engaged right now at Los Al. He's also actually ran a horse at Ellis yesterday. And we'll catch up with Richard Balthus. I also want to find out where he got that suit. He Derby Day, he had on a suit that I got to know. I got to know where he got it. Back after this, Jimmy Jerkins this hour as well. Stay with us.